Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Generic Foiling Podcast. You joined just Freddie and I for one of our Sunday evening catch-ups today. We have been prepping for the...
Although we've spent the entire weekend together anyway.
So we have.
There's not really much to catch up on, personally.
No, but we've been running today. We're taking our training for downwinding very seriously. And it looks like you have to do a lot of pumping and downwinding. So we've started an extreme fitness regime and we did 20K on the cliffs.
For anyone that does want to know what we're doing, we've signed up to a... Well, I say we've signed up. I was peer pressured into joining you and the rest of the lads, let's call them, on a 20-mile trail run on the East Devon coastline, which is in now 2 weekends' time. So for anyone that wants to have a laugh, I reckon we'll probably have to put some pictures up because... I ain't going to do well.
Yeah, you started training. Well. What? When did you start training?
Week ago, 2 weeks ago.
Whereas it all the rest of us, we started training in autumn, and then by Christmas, we were extremely race-ready, fit, and bored of running.
So I think I've probably done well in that regard, if I could have actually built up any kind of enthusiasm for this race at all. But I was, 2 weekends' time, basically. 20 miles, East Devon, 1,000 metres of elevation. And neither of us are runners, but you've got a remarkably good base fitness level. I thought I did, but I think all these now 5 years of sitting on a sofa selling people stuff over the phone has not really done me any wonders, which
is
a shame.
You have to remember that bit of advice, which I don't know whether we can go public or not. Freddie and I did go on a long run a week or two ago up a particularly steep hill up to Peak Hill in Sidmouth, and it was very sloppy and very muddy, and we got to that tree section and I'd been running with my girlfriend and then you'd started walking and I came to overtook you, and I said to you, you have to imagine that you're stamping on something, Freddie. Get that anger out. Think what you might be stamping on. It's a brand.
It's a brand that I've been told off for slamming numerous times now by people in the industry and people on the podcast. So
anyway...
It didn't work enthusiastically.
No, you didn't run.
Yeah, this is a news week episode. That's what we're doing, isn't it? Nice little chill chat, end of the weekend, because we've got fuck all else to do.
Shout out to, is it Matt from Bude, for giving up his time to officially print the first batch of both the Generic Foiling Pod logo t-shirts and the Wanglords t-shirts.
A very select few Wanglords t-shirts, pretty much gone by the time we'd stopped giving away free ones to me and you.
Now, this is something that there's been a number of you when we've posted pictures on socials and stuff that have reached out to us and basically gone dibs. All of you people should now have been contacted to basically get first refusal. So you've all been allocated a t-shirt. So if you are one of those people and you haven't had a message from us, which... then basically message us. To everybody else, there are a limited few still available. Shout out for Matt for doing that. We've got a bit of a dilemma, haven't we, when it comes to the Wanglords t-shirts. Rich rightly pointed out that should these be for public sale, or at the very least, should there be a set number of rules for which you have to agree to abide by if you are going to wear this garment? Because I don't
think
the
nice thing is most people, as was stipulated in one of the messages we did get, are willing to wear the words Wanglords on their t-shirts or out on their chest proudly, as funny as they might find it, wearing that kind of thing in public, especially when I think the person in said comment said, I'm a 46-year-old father of two. I don't really want to wear a Wanglords t-shirt, unfortunately. At least we got that going for ourselves. The select kind of people that are going to want to put that emblazoned on their chest is quite small. So they will be less better selling than the logo, hopefully. But
the question remains, can anybody, is it open to all?
My thinking is everyone knows now because we banged on about how much we want dollar bills to go to AWSI. So I will take anyone's money. But with the Wanglords t-shirts, we want a story. We want a good reason and a good bit of banter to talk about on the podcast about some bullshit. And it doesn't even have to be wing related.
So they are, we do have sizes left. I think we've got mediums, large, extra large in the podcast logo. And I think we've got medium and large in the Wang Lords. And we are not faffing around with the website yet because it's being a pain in the ass. But they are £25 posted in the United Kingdom. They are £28.50 posted to Europe and £31 posted anywhere else. Message us and we will send you bank details and you will be helping fund our trip to America. Moving on. Oh, well, we should probably say that you've already got your eyes lined up for future merch, haven't you? This is the beginning of everything.
Yeah, Matt was the one that sent me the picture of the GFP logo stapled on the front of a cricket cup, which a couple of people didn't know what it actually was. I put that picture up. The world's our oyster, Liam. We're going to put GFP logos on anything, anything and everything. He's been very kind enough, as we said, to send us a few spare prints as well. So we literally can put it on whatever we want.
I think underwear.
How big's the press? Presumably you can't just stick these on the likes of Nick Baker's back or something whilst he's not looking. Oh, I think you might like that, actually. Anyway, so T-shirts are live. Messages about those. We will get them on the website eventually, but we just don't want to pay an extortionate amount. Same as the bloody coffee account thing. We've been annoyed. It's like 10% or 20% they take.
Yeah, it depends how much people donate. The moral of the story is the more you donate, ironically, the less the percentage. So, you know, so donate loads. Other news, before we get stuck into foiling, there is actually quite a bit of foiling news this week. Related to the T-shirts, my dearest eldest brother, who does listen to this despite the fact that he hasn't done water sports in 2 decades, he was done with a lovely fine example of a Y-Reg Mark IV Golf 1.9 TDI. Sadly, for those that are interested in cars, it's not the PD engine. It's very similar, but it's the ALH engine code, which was pre-PD. I received that essentially for free from him. It's going to cost me 2 T-shirts, which he has been allocated. What did you say about my new whip today, Freddie? Because I did debut journey to Bantham in it.
It's fucking horrible. It's terrible. It looks like an old man's car. Your poor girlfriend has to sit in the front of that and be chauffeured around like she's in her grandpa's car. However, we did say, what were we saying yesterday?
Well, because the cost of it was 2 T-shirts.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. You're definitely going to take it. But I think the funny thing, Liam and I have both been driving either heavy vans. Well, no, I've been driving heavy vans and heavy diesel vehicles since I could drive. I learned to drive in a Discovery. You've been driving souped up petrol old cars for a long time. And I think you said something along the lines of, or a camper. And you're like, oh, it actually drives really comfortably. No shit. This is what cars are supposed to drive like.
It's comfortable. It's economical.
It's cheap to run. All these things that normal people, regular folk who don't drive around with wetsuits, surfboards, kite kit, bikes all the time don't have to worry about.
What was fantastic when I did, I drove to South Hams to go and have a session with Rich. And what was really good about it was the fact that Mark IV Golfs are notorious for having leaky door cards, which basically means that you end up with, whenever it rains, water just pours into the footwell. Now, because it's the driver's door, it means that the driver's side rear footwells has just ended up full of water. And because this Golf's been sat on my drive for about 4 months. The only reason that I actually put it on the road last week was because I'd forgotten about my van's MOT and it ran out. Anyway, we won't talk about that. And so I put this thing on the road, but it hadn't been driven for about 4 months, in which time it had accumulated about 3 inches of water in the rear footwell, which meant that most of one half of the car's carpet was absolutely saturated. As always, Freddie, I like to focus on the positives, as you know. What is the advantage of having a car that is already sopping wet?
Wet wings in the back.
All that gear, just fuck that in the back.
If anyone had driven past Liam's car in Exmouth whilst we were out running today, they would have been able to pinch this car very easily because he decided to leave all five doors open so it could air out a little bit. Left it for 2.5 hours and came back.
I was Nobody'd quite annoyed it. That no one stole it because I could have just called the insurance company. I hadn't left the key in it. Ironically, I left that the rest of the afternoon and then it actually did start drizzling at some point and one of my lovely neighbours came and shut all the doors.
Well, that's very nice of him. That's very good of him.
Anyway.
Should we talk about some foiling? We're 10 minutes in, nearly 11 minutes in and we can start talking about foiling now. So I have just learnt, most importantly, that if and when we start competing on the GWA wing foil wave circuit, I will actually be charged the same amount for either...
Hold on, Freddie. We need backstory here. We need backstory to this.
Oh, no, I don't know. I still think it's the funniest thing ever.
It is, to contextualize.
Come boring.
On.
I'm not a contextualizing person, am I? I don't even know what the word means.
Ponte Preta's just happened in Cape Verde. Insane event. Everybody's seen it. We'll talk about some of the key highlights in a minute. We were curious, because of the riding in the final that we'll come on to, what the rules actually state about certain things. So we opened up the GWA's official rule book, in which...
This is all waffle that you didn't have to bother putting in. You could have just left... Yeah, you've removed my buzz now by going into some spiely bullshit. The moral of the story is I can get away with both verbally and physically assaulting someone for the same amount of money. So you get charged.
Better than that. $500 for verbal assault of a, was it of any staff member? Oh, anybody. Yep. Also $500 for physical assault. But unsportsmanly conduct comes with a significantly heavier fine.
They don't like that. Yeah, they really don't like that.
$5,000.
They would much rather you called someone a prick and punch them in the face than, I don't know, what would you do that's unsportsmanlike conduct? Look sour on the trophy podium. don't shake his hand. £5,000. Punch him in the face. Ah, we'll let that one slide.
Do you know
that one classifies as unsportsmanlike? Go on.
What got me thinking was, how much would it cost me to fight my way to victory? How many hits are there? Four. For those of you that don't know, I have a reasonable martial arts background, and I reckon next year, Cape Verde, I'm going to turn up with a bit of training. Bosh, four rounds if I just injure all of my competitors.
But what's the prize money? That's what you want to know. You don't want to spend more than you earn.
Basically. Surely, I mean, if it's five rounds, I got to get through. You know, that's $2,500. Also, they might not actually charge you the same fine for the same offence. It might be a set fee of $500. Who do you reckon would be the hardest one to, you know, duff up before the...
The problem is they're all bloody kids, aren't they? Who's the duotone lad? Is he from Cape Verde?
Yeah, there is a guy that did really well.
The big duotone lad. You ain't taking him. No chance.
No.
You got the others. You could wrap Marlowe's face around his board, I reckon, quite comfortably. He's tiny. But the duotone rider, no chance. Big lad. Ain't going near him.
Better, bit more bulking and get back in,
I don't really
back
know,
in the ring.
But they're all skinny, weedy guys, though, aren't they, really? And they, like I said, they're all kids, so they don't know what's going on. But saying that, the parents are all there. I bet they are.
Yeah, but you'll be there too. And I'll have the Wang Lords.
I can't afford to back you up. Do we get individual amounts? Some random guy on the beach just beat the shit out of the finalists.
Can you be issued a fine? Okay, all right, too far.
A little bit ridiculous.
The reason we wanted to look at the rules is mainly...
We don't conduct violence on any of the children in the GWA, let's just say.
No.
So yeah, we wanted to look at it because we both watched fewer rounds.
I like how you classified violence. Verbal abuse is absolutely fine. We're fair game. Yeah. If they're your friends, verbally abuse them as much as you want.
As long as you can afford it, throw as much abuse as you want, from the beach preferably. We both watched a few of the rounds, didn't we? I didn't watch the final. Did you actually watch the final live?
I watched the final. It was nuts, yeah.
And I did, I even went into Reactive Water Sports down in Plymouth the next day, and even Dave there was like, holy hell, did he watch the final? It was so good. So it did make the rounds, and I like the way that people in the biz, as we like to call it, nobody does, but we'll call it that, is actually taking note of what's going on, which is really cool. There's a lot of gong presence there. Marlowe did phenomenally well, but I think everybody came away, and even all the Instagram accounts came away just showing what Cash could do, basically.
Yeah, Cash was big on the social media, and that was the main reason for our dive into the rule book, was two of his presumably high-scoring features, which, even though we're both massively keen on wave riding being wave riding, one of these things is arguably not wave riding. Despite that, it's still super cool and we like it. So the two things that we weren't sure whether they would score, number one, I don't know whether it was only in the final or did you do it in an earlier heat, but in the final, near the end, he ditched the win.
Both of them. Oh, so he did that twice. And then his grinds that we talked about, he did that in every round, I think.
Yeah, so those grinds, they were so I can't remember what the guy's name is, but for anyone that's interested, there's a slingshot rider, or at least he was a slingshot rider up until very recently. I think he might have changed now. But he's a kite foiler that's been doing this for ages. And I think he calls it like a rhino slide or something. And because of the power of the kite being, I guess, more efficient than a wing, he drags these out and he actually does transitions a bit like wake style back in the day when you used to slide on the tip. And he does those grinds of the foil, but through a full on jibe turn kite foiling. And it's absolutely nuts. But Cash
has been... What was awesome with Cash is just how far up these... Well, how comfortable he looked doing that trick that is already alien to in the pocket of a wave, of a very fucking big wave as well. It actually was quite, and I don't want to say breathtaking, that's stupid. It was a big moment, I think. Even some of the videos, even the video that he popped up a little while ago, the first one that we guys shared around ourselves of him riding wherever it was, when I was like, you can't tell from his tacks into waves where the wind's actually coming from in the first place. Like, he's riding so far upwind on the wave. Whatever he was doing, was like, this is now another level. He's taking it further. And I agree, Marlowe was definitely up there. Those two were definitely the finalists. And Marlowe was riding incredible stuff.
I don't think Cash's wave selection was that good in the final compared to previous heats. Maybe it was wave selection.
It looked like it changed because I watched one heat that Marlowe was in and I can't remember who else it was with. And Marlowe got on this way. Like, it was a pretty pathetic little, like, not pathetic at all. It's bloody Ponte Preta, but they were smaller than what they had been. And then this giant wave came in and Marlowe got that one. You thought, well, that's one of the tens. Like, he just, I couldn't believe how high he was up these waves either. I've said it to Guy before. I don't know how they don't pop out of the back of the wave. Like, he's carving so hard up the top of the face of the wave. How they don't breach, but the other side of the wave.
Sometimes they do.
Well, I know some of the tips, but it just looks like they could literally fly straight through the face of the wave.
I've seen plenty of prone video. I think actually the bigger wave helps with that because the bigger wave's obviously got a bit more of a lip on it. But I've seen countless prone videos where, I think Casey does it all the time. Bennett's does it all the time. Well, no, they're continuing through the carve, but the wave's quite small. They're generating so much power. The one wingtip, comes out the back of the wave. Mm. I see that increasingly, Connor.
So we were looking at the rules because we on the Generic Foiling podcast obviously promote our hatred of wing freestyle quite avidly, despite probably going to be talking to Balls Muller at some point and trying to refrain from...
I did another jump the other day in front of Rich.
What did he think?
He
Is
laughed.
Is that why he rode over and slapped you?
Maybe, yeah.
we're personally not fans. But there was
I like watching it.
What
now? I like watching it.
I'm getting
it.
There.
I don't advocate.
I don't flick my phone off the reel quite as quickly as maybe as I did. Somebody did a 10 or a 12 the other day and I thought this is just getting a bit flipping bonkers. But I dread to think what kind of conditions they're riding in at the minute. If they're landing with so much power as they are, from the height that they are, and then still being able to ride out so easily, they must be powered as hell. Not just like normal riding powered, they must be stacked. Because they're not struggling to get back up and going. And it's purely, it's not skill. It's, well, you know, it's very skillful, but the moment they hit the ground, unless they are on foil, which most of them aren't because they're landing from such a height, they're just literally sheeting hardly at all and they're up and gone, which means they've got to be riding at 30 mile an hour or so. I don't know. It just looks a bit bonkers. But going back to the initial point, there was chat that Cash, you know, can he be scored for these things? Because we don't know what the actual rules are between the whole surf freestyle thing, which we don't really get, and the wave riding, because suddenly you've got someone like Cash there who seems to be mixing the two, and there is seemingly going to be this little bit of a fine line. And I guess that's why the surf freestyle thing is there in the first place, because we have this ability to do these tricks in these conditions, in the, you know, the thing, in these areas.
The thing with him is, so in particular with that grind, he's doing that with the wing powered up, fine. I think I would argue that if I was to write the rule book, I don't know if I'd score it now, but I think in a year's time I wouldn't score it. But you know what? In a year's time, he will be doing that without the wing powered up. I'm absolutely sure of it. It will progress, and he will be able to do that without the added, you know, stability that a wing provides. But also, so, there's no question that he is doing that maneuver. Like we said, he was literally in the pocket. Like, he was as deep as you could be, as deep as you or I would ever dream of being on that wave, just riding it when he was doing this stuff.
Don't let the listeners think that we could actually be anywhere near that. I would be no. I'd be so far out on the shoulder of that wave, you wouldn't be able to see me from the pocket. And I'd still be shitting myself. So don't let the listeners think that we can actually do that kind of stuff. The question then, you're in a wave event. Okay, he's getting rid of the wing, but you're in a wave event and you're potentially not, you're talking about not scoring somebody getting barreled, which is essentially what he's trying to do by getting rid of the wing. Which, when
on something else now, but that's...
Yeah, I'm skipping around. Right,
we've gone
skipping
from
around.
The grinding to the release of the wing.
Well, I never thought the grinding was an issue at all. I didn't.
It is powered up, isn't it? But then it is wing surfing.
Yeah.
Like I said, my argument, I'd say no, because I'd push for him. I'm sure he has the talent to do that with the wing depowered, and I reckon he will do that next year in conditions that good.
But it's what was so striking about the video that Armstrong and the guys have all put out, even GWA from that event, was the prolonged length of the grind, if we're calling it a grind, which I think seems a bit daft because it's a full
right,
a water.
Rhino slide, I'm sure, is what the guy who started
I'll call
it
a slide. I'm not calling it a rhino slide. That's stupid. But slide, the slide sounds all right-ish. Without a wing, it's not going to be nowhere. Yeah, you're going to have to go into that thing like Mach 10 to get 2 meters, 5 meters, whatever it is. Whereas actually having the power from the wing, he can go for a while because he can shoot in the power. But then is that cheating?
The point is, we couldn't find it in the rule book, could we? Because what's really weird with the rule book, they've got a bunch of definitions and they talk a bit about the surf discipline, but there's a whole chapter, or at least this is what's publicly available. Maybe it's an old version and they're running from it. They must be
well,
running.
Hang on. We also only looked at it for 5 minutes, Liam.
That's a lot of research by our standards. The one that we opened on the disciplines page that said the wing rule book, at least in the contents. I mean, we're not going to read the whole thing. It's 300 pages or whatever. Maybe 80 pages, that's a lot. It had a whole content section about surf freestyle discipline and judging criteria, and then it had a whole thing about freestyle discipline judging criteria. I didn't see a surf discipline judging criteria.
Maybe there'll be something that we can't find. The thing I was quite, or I was thinking as I was reading it, is that, you know, that definition of anything in there, we're talking about winging. Winging itself didn't exist. What are we on, 4 years ago now? 3 years ago? 4 years ago? Like, the whole thing didn't exist. So for them to go and stipulate, basically they're just going to have to adjust everything. Because I know, I thought, even when it said the handle, like the trick or wave must be ridden with the wing in its, in the front depower handle, I'm like, well, in a year's time, we might not have that. From a wing design standpoint, we might not have that. Or, you know, there's always going to be these riders that come across like Cash is now and throw a massive spanner in the works. It's the same with the whole Tom Bridge thing, isn't it? That's what, he got marked down for years because technically in the rule book, it said it was only going to
Yeah, kite below 45 degrees, wasn't it, or something? It was in the rule book, maybe.
Yeah. And then suddenly you've got, I mean, to be honest, thinking about it, it's exactly like Tom, because Tom's in the same point where if Cash now puts any video up, I'm going to watch it because I want to see what the hell he's doing. Same with Tom. He wasn't scoring well on the Freestyle World Cup, but if Tom puts a video up, you watch the bloody thing.
That brings me on to a point, though, which is that when it comes to dropping the wing to score, I would argue, no, that does not score because that's no longer wing foiling. Yes, it's, you know, it's wing-accessed surfing on the way, fine. But I would argue that's not wing foiling anymore. However, I think he was absolutely right to do it. And anyone that's right to do it, because if you've already got a couple of scores on the board at this point of the game, when things are so exciting, it's going to give you variety score. It's going to make you stand out to the judges. Oh, he's the guy that chucked his wing, you know. And to bring that onto my next point, even though I don't think it should score for the event, I think that him doing that so regularly and going on a pump fest and linking waves and all the rest of it was the very best thing that he could have done as a rider for his profile. And for all those people that get stuck, you know, I reckon there's a lot of people. What it says to me is that he's not necessarily that competition minded. He's just in love with the sport, because there's a lot of people that would go, I want to win. I want to be the best. And to be the best means winning the competition, which is the World Tour. And so I'm going to study the rules and do everything in the rules. Whereas, like you said, that kid captivated people's imagination because he was just doing rad creative shit.
Which I think
has been for a long time too.
But it's been helped by the fact the sport's so new.
Yeah.
There's no way realistically it's established enough to have a world tour with concrete rules, is it? It's not windsurfing, been around since the 70s. It's not kite surfing, which has been around since the 90s now. Like it's so new, it's gonna continually change. And we all know now that he's going to be the one to change it, which is cool.
Yeah, but as a judge on the day, if that's not in the rule book, you'd have had to have made a decision. We can't guarantee whether it is or isn't in the rules, but the point is I wouldn't have scored anything that he did having let go of the wing. However, I don't know where, because I don't think they have a variety score either. I think it's just two best waves, isn't it, like WSL.
Which is bonkers to think you're now not going to score someone that got barreled at Ponte Preta on foil. I fully get it. And okay, technically, yeah, he's not quite fully barreled, but that was his aim. That's what he's trying to do. You know, if he goes out
there.
Yeah, but
that's him. He's getting the benefit of, as I said, he is the right thing to do as a rider. But it's not wing foiling, and therefore I wouldn't be like, you imagine if you've got two guys, and quite rightly, Marlo has ridden his two wave best waves at a heat better. But it's like 0.1 point marging it, 0.1 difference between the two. And then you go, oh, well, that guy's trying to get barreled and he ditched the wing to do so. I couldn't justifiably go, right, I'm now giving it to him because he did that cool thing.
Agreed. Yeah, I can see that. I don't like it because he's essentially throwing his wing into white water and rocks, and it's incredibly sacrificial.
That's offshore, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but he's dropping it in the stupidest place.
I think all the waves survived. I think he just pumped back around and picked it up most of the time. There's so much updraft off that wave. I think it gets quite a boost. And as long as it's over the breaking section, which if you're on the wave, it's probably going to be over the breaking one or the next one, it should blow out the way.
Well, I felt it was a bit sacrificial and I didn't like it.
Hmm.
But what I did like was watching quite a few of the riders nail themselves in the white water and up onto the
even
rocks.
Bigger waves than last year. We talked about this last year. This year was next level.
It was very cool.
2 foot.
Yeah, it was very, very good. So I would definitely suggest anyone goes and watches the even just the finals or the highlights.
The highlights,
there.
Yeah.
Turn it down, though. I think the Wang Lords would probably suggest that you turn the volume off. You don't want to listen to the commentary.
No. If you want to listen to Tom Court, go watch his nice vlogs.
No more should be said about that.
we've been into Edge following Ponte Preta, and Steph and Guy had seen some of the events, and we both agreed that Guy Bridge, had he been there, would have definitely got through the first couple of rounds. And I am going to make it a personal mission We also think Steph would have got through the ladies too. And I'm going to make it a personal mission that if they are not otherwise engaged with some other schedule next year, that they have entered into that event. Even if we have to crowdfund their entry fee.
It would be phenomenal to watch Guy there. And like I think you said at the time, he wouldn't have looked out of place. Not in the wave event. Why don't you tell the lovely listeners about Leon's foil? Was it you that we were talking about with his foil?
So Leon, UK rider, he's only, 15?
Not even that, I don't think.
He's, he was...
Leon Rocks on Instagram.
He was representing the UK. He's only a teenage lad, rides for F1. He was riding an Escape 430, which is like a newly released small kite foil from F1. And that was already, apparently he was already saying that is too much foil for that way for him and his weight in those conditions. And I can't remember who it came from, but somebody at F1, maybe, or Dom, somebody was saying that his dad was messaging them to basically ask what the best way of cutting down the 430 Escape is to make it smaller. He's aiming to cut like another 15-20% of the surface area off of it for when the conditions are like that for Leon, which is just nuts. Like, we're at the point where these bloody front wings for the smaller riders in conditions like that are going to look like stabilizers.
Which begs to differ what the stabilizers are going to look like. But even, I think Tom was actually talking about it during the commentary, saying that most of the lads are on 400 to 500 square centimetre foils anyway, which then when you take into account Leon's, I have no idea how much he weighs, 50 kilos, 60 kilos maybe? I don't really know at all. He might have shot up since I last saw him, but, you know, he's not a big lad yet. So granted, he's going to need something absolutely bloody tiny.
Yeah, nuts. Good event.
But he did well. He did well. And it definitely makes me want to watch whatever the next one is. We did look through the list ages ago, didn't we? But when there's another
Brazil
wave,
and Canaries, isn't it? I can't remember what the dates. They're the surf ones, I think.
Speaking of the bridges again, which we like to do fairly often.
Well, the reason he can't be in these exotic destinations is because he's just so desperate to stay in Exmouth and go downwinding in the southwest.
Yeah. So anyone, again, who's been living under a rock, Guy went downwinding, where was he, in Cornwall somewhere with the Cornish crew?
Constantine to Watergate.
Yeah.
Secret spot one to secret spot two. I forget.
No,
sorry.
I think there's about seven secret spots in that neck of the woods. So yeah, he's done what did he say it was, kilometre-wise? Just 10 kilometres, wasn't it, or 20 kilometres?
It wasn't very long.
Yeah, or whatever, we'll make it up. So it's 15 kilometres. But it's a long way down the coastline, and Emma quite well flew the drone for
Emma's,
him. And
Emma's Guy's girlfriend, yeah.
Yeah, they put a little YouTube video. If you haven't looked at Guy's videos, they're always great. But go and have a look at that, because that's the first, and I know there are some guys downwinding in the UK, so I apologise, but that is the first serious conditioned video of UK downwinding where it looks good.
It's legit. That is,
it's very legit.
Ocean
and just
groundswell.
Purely because, like, the footage is so good. I've no doubt that there are some other lads doing the downwinding, maybe up in Scotland and further over east. But the footage that Emma managed to get of Guy riding, bearing in mind it's drone footage, it just looks sick. It's so cool, and you've got the headlands everywhere. The backdrop is great. The water's blue. Jack Galloway, who's also putting out some great footage, take note. People like blue water. They don't like brown sludge in the Solent. But it's mental. It's very cool. And annoyingly, it put you off, didn't it? It turned me right on back to downwinding again, but it turned you off.
I just thought it looked hard. And Chris tried to, Chris Burke, Wanglords, he tried to wing out and then do a pack down, I believe, and pretty much wrote off an ozone flux in doing so. He couldn't even get off like out through the shore dump. Like, this was a very large westerly swell, I think, or southwesterly. What was the swell? No, because it was thrown from the north, like 40 knots, isn't it?
Yeah,
so it
must. Yeah.
Anyway, it was a nuts weather day, but I really enjoyed the backstory. So we went down to Exmouth yesterday and had a little catch up with Guy and Emma, and I just thought the whole backstory was hilarious. Because part of the reason that they were there was for Guy and Emma to have a little escape, because it was one of her birthdays. So he'd like booked some accommodation, some nice accommodation down there. And then he said that she had the dentist at like 3 o'clock or something. But because of the tides, he
was back in Exmouth.
Yeah. Back at home. And so they know they needed to leave at like 2 or something. And then Emma was supposed to come in the water with him. She was going to go winging, but for one reason or another, she couldn't go. So then she's filming, dropping him off. And he's like, I was fully aware of the fact that he's trying to paddle out. He's like got in the water, I don't know, 12:30 or something. He's trying to paddle out. Chris Burke's getting munched in the shore break. And Guy's like, well, I can't. I mean, I'd like to wait and see what happens, but I can't wait because I need to get this downwinder done in the next hour so that we're not late for the dentist. And I just think there is not a single person in this country that even the most proficient downwinders, I suspect they cannot go, I need to do this downwinder that I've never done this stretch before. I mean, he's barely been downwinding. I don't think he's even had 10 sessions in his life. And he's going to go, I've only got an hour to do this. Right on. Off he goes. Does it.
And flies, and then, by the looks of things.
What was
flies.
Really... When he was talking about the wave he got at Watergate, the most excited he seemed to be for the whole thing was the fact that when he arrived at the downwind spot, because it was blowing 40 knots onshore at Watergate, which is a notoriously big wave, like it's a surf beach typically. Put it into perspective, kite surfing, people have died kite surfing at Watergate, getting stuck in these waves. And Guy was bloody excited about the massive chunk he got into the beach.
He was, wasn't he? Bearing in mind, I mean, we ought to say that he did flipping love this, the entire downwinder by the sounds of things. He really, really enjoyed it. But he did say, oh, I got into this 6-foot thing on the way into Watergate and it was absolutely massive. And he's on a big foil as well, so I don't know how the hell he kept the nose down on that thing.
He's on the Silk 1050, was it?
Sounded good. Silk 1050, which he said, oh, well, he hasn't used the 850. He wants to use the 850, but... he hasn't used it yet, so he needs to practice the paddling up on that. But yeah, the conditions just look mental. So for anyone that hasn't watched the video, go and have a watch. Yeah, it's cool to see. It just made me want to go and have a go at it, but I know this is a problem because even he was like, oh, you need to get involved with it. When you watch a video of a guy, you've got to take into account that there's a lot of talent. Let's just say talent.
Talent and experience.
Yeah. On foil or off foil, because even he was like, oh, I'm not much of a paddler. And I was like, it doesn't flipping matter when you
know
don't fall off foil.
Here's what really, really peed me off. I asked him, because he was saying about how the swell was quite sizable and all the rest of it. And I said, was it like, how did you find it? Was it quite straightforward? And he did say, it was pretty easy, wasn't it? He didn't struggle to get up onto the foil, and he said it was quite easy. And he was like, way easier than the runs that we did in the Westerlies back at home. And I was just like, oh, Christ, Guy.
It just doesn't help. You can't take his account into your figuring out of the sport, because Guy's done it 3 times and he's bloody better than most.
Who was the video? You shared a downwind video on Instagram, and then I shared one today. Let me look it up real quick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because we got a message, didn't we? What have I ended up on?
There's a chap I met in Sardinia last year for a random gig who was also a winger.
Is it McFlowey?
I've no idea what you're on about.
This is the one I shared. He's on an arm. Walker Hendricks. I put a thing on our Instagram of a video he put on of him downwinded on like a 6-foot-something Armstrong board. And we got a message back from John Mann, who's a very well-known downwinder from the Netherlands. And he just replied and put, that kid's been foiling for less than a year, I believe, or roughly a year now. When I foiled with him in Hood River last year, he was about 3 months in. This, like, it's making it
really
look incredible. Yeah.
I am watching right now. It's very, very good. He's, yeah, it's good. It's very good. I shared Indigo's video from Tenerife.
Whilst he was doing that, we were, because he went up on the Sunday, and on the Sunday we got surprisingly good conditions at home because we had southeasterlies in Exmouth, which is like the dream wind direction. Normally they tend to come, like easterly gradients tend to come for a couple of days at a time, and you normally need a good sort of 24 hours plus of wind blowing for it to really generate a good swell. But last Sunday, it had only been blowing since that morning, but it was bloody great by the afternoon.
No, it wasn't.
It was not. Big enough for you to be scared and run away.
I don't know why you thought that was so good, because it was crap when I got out there.
You were in the wrong spot. I said we have to go out and you have to go downwind to where it breaks along the back of the sandbar, and you never did. You stayed in the channel in the white water. I was out for like nearly 3 hours, and I just kept the rides were so ridiculously long because you could just keep peeling off any wave, didn't need to pick the wing back up. You could just hop onto the next wave, keep going downwind. And every time I decided I'm getting a bit tired now, I'm going to come in, I'd try and ride back upwind and I'd just see another line of swell. Yeah, I'll take that. It was fantastic. I put a few little clips that Terry took, which didn't necessarily show the best of it, but you can get the idea of what it was like. This was why I bring this up, Freddie. It was nothing to do with foiling. Terry Luxton is a legend. He's also, I think, slightly deranged. This man is the father of the Kite Twins. And I don't know whether you know this. I got connections with Terry because my brother actually lived with him years ago, him and Ruth. Anyway, the Kite Twins are two teenagers from Exmouth, Alfie and Archie, and they are slingshot riders, international riders, kiters, really good. And they're just always on the water. And Terry's always doing anything he can to facilitate it. He is the media mogul for them, and every single session he will paddle out on this bloody inflatable paddleboard that Slingshot have given them, and he will paddle out to wherever they are, usually in Exmouth at low tide when the kiting's the best. There's a sandbar, so he can just paddle to that, stand on that and film. But when it gets nuts, he will just go out with them, doesn't matter where they are on this bloody paddleboard. It's worth putting into perspective, Terry is probably still one of the UK's best windsurfers. He used to be sponsored athlete, like insane level windsurfer. And yet he goes out on this inflatable paddleboard to go and film the boys. This day to get out back to the waves was probably 2 kilometres off the beach. Because it was cross shore, one of the boys towed him. So he just held on to the back of their harness and he towed him out through these waves. So Terry was going face first, nose first into like, you know, nearly chest to head high waves, lines coming in. Apparently every single wave he was going over, he was getting airborne on this inflatable paddleboard. Anyway, they're now 2 kilometres out to sea. They're out at the Safeway mark to our channel. The water is brown as you like because the wind's coming from the east. There's all this swell. It's 30 knots. I'm fully powered on a 3.5. They time it wrong. The wave rolls him over off the paddleboard. The leash snaps and the fin comes off. So the board's just gone. Anyway, I'm like, surely after all this time, why hasn't Terry learnt to wing? And then he could just wing out, follow them around, sit on his board and film them.
I am curious as to why he hasn't. I don't think I've seen him windsurf, though, so I don't know. Well, I've not. Yeah, I don't know why he doesn't wing. You would have thought it'd be way easier, especially in those conditions. It was gnarly. It was
Sam Light, have a word with that man and find out what's going on in his brain. Next time, when I actually spend time on the beach, I'm going to ask him about it. But he's a phenomenal windsurfer.
I am just watching Terry Luxton windsurfing freestyle Dahab 2004. Were the boys? The boys wouldn't have been
born then. No.
Lemonette.
Anyway, my foil session that day was bloody phenomenal.
I lasted 35 minutes. I thought, this is stupid. I'm absolutely hammered on a 4.3. This is not worth it. I'm going home.
Yeah.
So I went home.
Two things. I rode past Steph on multiple occasions. That session was like, we've got to invest in smaller foils. A bit like this conversation about Leon. On days like that, as soon as it's legitimately hit high and it's actually got some power to it, a 950 is not small enough. You're just absolutely maxed on it. So whether or not it's the right time, because you know we're about to come in spring and summer when it's a bit flatter, but if I can work out my bank account balance, I may well try and get a smaller foil. Rich has gone away to Cape Town. Part of his work in the media. I think he's going to the core meet or something. So I've got his Skate 750 whilst he's away. So I'm going to hopefully have a play on that and see whether that does the ticket when it's a bit bigger. But I just wanted to talk. I haven't really mentioned a great deal about the fact that I've been on this Carbon Master a while. I feel like maybe it's a combination of using smaller board and mast, but that skate is so much better on that carbon mast. The feedback is better and the control is better. It is just better. Now, it is really difficult because, you know, an aluminium setup is just so much cheaper. It does do the job. But if you can afford it, there's no doubt that carbon one is better. And I am very much enjoying it. And the thing that I'm actually noticing is,
if you're at a certain level, you'll benefit most, I guess.
Well, here's what I'm finding. I felt like I'd plateaued. And I feel like that mast has undone that. And I feel like every session I'm getting better again. And even on Friday, Rich and I were in South Milton and it was onshore again, strong winds, probably 20 to 25, quite all over the place swell. It's like it was at low tide and it's a really narrow place, South Milton. So all of this energy comes into this pinch point and some of it's going over the shallow reef and some of it's bashing around these rocks. And it, like, when it gets big, it gets really, really turbulent. And even though that was the case, I was finding these like hollow little sections coming into the beach and actually making the most out of it. And I was just thinking to myself, when I was at the level I was at, coming off of the aluminium mast, changing to the carbon, I don't think I could have ridden in conditions like this. And I also felt like if I was still using the aluminium one the whole time, I don't think I'd have got good enough by now to be able to use them. I think I've got that much more control, which has actually allowed me to improve because it's not an external factor causing cock-ups anymore. Yeah, that was all I wanted to say.
High modulus masks came out about 2 years ago, Liam.
And I'm here to tell you that now is the time to buy because I've said so.
No, it's funny when we look back at when they first came out, the first few high modulus, and yet I thought it made a big difference. There was a whole conversation of price versus having a go on one. You know, Armstrong very quickly went from bendy carbon to straight carbon, essentially. Well, it was bendy, wasn't it? Yeah, people liked it, which is fine, but it was definitely more flexible. And then even the Axis ones were, you know, I wouldn't even dream about riding one of the old Axis carbon masts now because the whole script has been flipped towards stiffness, which feels phenomenal.
I feel like it's not just stiffness. I feel like the feedback's better, and I don't know whether the feedback's better because of the stiffness, but I don't know. It's a really pleasurable experience.
The matchup of the matchup. Well, the first time I rode, that was it. When I first rode, I think the Skipper Wing, because I haven't ridden the Apple Slice, Skipper Wing and a high modulus mast with the Spitfires. In fact, when I rode it, my whole current setup, I was like, holy shit, this is it. This is what more could I possibly want out of a setup with the brands that I work with? This is the absolute epitome. Having that rigidity on the board and rigidity under the mast. And I don't care, you know, what brands it is, you will feel a huge amount of difference with those high modulus masks. They're phenomenal.
No, it is good.
They're just bloody expensive.
Yeah, it was quite expensive. I remember when I, Dom really did it. He's a good salesman, isn't he, old Dom? When I
been around long enough, he knows the score.
I called him
up. You didn't need much talking into it, though, either.
No, I wanted one, but it's the fact that I had decided, having spoken to Charles, the F1 designer, which is great that we were able to do that, and having spoken to him, and I've been like, look, I don't have loads of money, but I've got enough to the carbon mast. And he was like, if you're just winging mostly, you'll be absolutely, like, it'll be brilliant on the 16 mil, the just less expensive one. And then I called Dom up, and he's like, wow, yeah, I mean, I've got both of them, but, you know, like, 90% of the ones that I've sold are the 14 mil high modulus ones. And, you know, you when it comes to, if you do sell it again, like, it'll be much easier. And he just came up with this whole list. And he was like, why don't I send you both? And then you can try them. So I'll send both and you can try and then just pay for the one you want. And then I was like, that sounds like a good idea. And then I'm like, now that I know the 14's coming, why am I going to not have that one? And then before you know it, I'm telling him not to bother sending the 16 and I'll just have the 14 mil high modulus one anyway. I'm glad I did.
Sat there clapping his hands thinking another sucker's falling for
sucker.
It. He didn't have a 16 to send.
No,
he didn't, did he?
No.
That's the end of the list, Liam.
Johnny Heineken video.
I haven't watched it. Oh, I haven't watched it.
Oh, bloody hell. There's another Johnny Heineken Sapphire video out. Ken actually pointed it out to us and then sent us a load of close-up shots of Johnny Heineken's board, his Sapphire board that he uses when it was in production. Because apparently they as you heard in the last episode, they work on a lot of their shapes together. That is a cool-looking board. It's like a scaled-up kite race board. Even though it's a big Sapphire board and he's riding it, both straps, front and rear, the tail is just so pulled in. It's got so much more width at the front than the tail. It looks insane. So, yeah, everyone go on the old YouTubes and... What's it called?
Flying Heineken.
Flying Heineken.
By Jamie Donaldson.
It doesn't matter how bad your day is. That will make it better.
What's the song, though? I haven't got it on. Is it as good as the last one? Because it was a song that did the last one.
No, no, it's not as good as the song before. But
man, it's only had 360 views. We need to share this shit. All right.
That's it. I got
to watch it.
Sunday night. Been cooking a beef roasting joint. So better go.
I don't have anything.
Good forecast this week. Wind tomorrow. Yeah, low tide. Easterlies later in the week. So, yeah. More exciting conditions that you'll think are rubbish and I'll think are amazing.
Hopefully. You know, it'd be nice eventually because I am getting a slight amount of depressedness to me. That it would be nice to have a good session when I want to actually have a session, not just 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, which pisses me off. Anyway, hope everyone's all right.
Do the usuals, you know, listen to the stuff, like, comment, subscribe, send us money.
T-shirts.
Buy t-shirts.
T-shirts. We will. I've ordered more stickers. Oh, yeah. We haven't told anyone about stickers yet.
We've got stickers coming.
We will order more t-shirts. We just did a small run to begin with. So once we sold these, then yeah, we'll put more on. But just whatever.
See you soon. OnlyFans is coming soon. All right. Bye. Bye.